Atish Tasir's journalism has appeared in publications like Time magazine, the Financial Times, and Esquire. He's also written two acclaimed books, a memoir called Stranger to History, A Son's Journey Through Islamic Lands, and a novel, The Temple Goers. He was on our show in November to discuss his second novel, Noon, which is about family, identity, morality, statehood, and the change that has swept India and Pakistan over the course of the last three decades. And we thought that we would re-air that conversation for you today as we celebrate the long holiday weekend. I began our conversation by noting that in addition to his writing, he's also known for his translation of Sadat Hasan Manto's short stories. And I asked Atish Tasir, was it your intention when you started this book that its story would combine all of the areas you've worked in, fiction, nonfiction, translation, and journalism?
Exactly. And my mother was a journalist, and I realized very quickly that I was a very bad journalist, at least for a certain kind of journalism. And I think that I'd been in an election where there was Gordon Brown sort of standing for re-election. I had one moment to ask him an important question, and I fluffed it. And so after that, I was always trying to work my way out of journalism, as it were.
But this novel kind of gives you an opportunity to combine all of the different areas that you've written in.
It's true. And I like very much, while I'm writing fiction, for there to be almost a kind of non-fictional crust, for there to be for the narrators to have the contours of my life in some way. So there's always a sense of nonfiction creeping in some ways.
And people will read all sorts of autobiographical stuff into this novel.
They will. It would be a mistake to read too much like that because there's an element of deception. It's almost a kind of conceit of sorts.
Your previous books were praised not only for their writing but also for presenting the stories of India and the Middle East in ways that went beyond the headlines. Is that a reason you've been writing books as opposed to journalism, because you can give a much more complex picture in the long form than you can in a newspaper or magazine article?
I think so, and I think especially when dealing with Pakistan, I felt very much the need for the imagination, that actually many of the things that were happening needed to be passed through that kind of filter. And I remember feeling it for the first time at the time when Benazir had just been killed, Benazir Bhutto. And there was an element, there was an air of kind of almost carnival. There was something that was so disturbing that I felt it would be strange to write about it nonfictionally.
Well, your father was assassinated recently. Was there the same kind of reaction?
It came nakedly to the surface. He was killed by his bodyguard. But what had been underlying, which I'd sensed at that time in Pakistan, which was a kind of menace, had come fully to the surface with my father's death. It was a kind of cathartic violence where people were really celebrating his killer, celebrating the act. It was grotesque in some ways.
Is it significant to you that your father died in the name of a cause? He was murdered because he was defending a Christian woman accused of blasphemy.
Yeah, it was a very important thing, we'd had a difficult relationship, and I was humbled in some ways by this unexpected act of courage on his part.
Unexpected, you say?
Well, he
was known as a kind of a liberal politician.
He was outspoken and bold in some ways, but this was really to kind of to put yourself in a very dangerous situation for the sake of your country. And so, it was very moving.
Well, you hardly knew your father. In fact, you're talking about writing about Pakistan, but you grew up in India. Your father was in Pakistan. How much time have you spent in Pakistan?
At one point, or for about the 5 years that I did know my father, I would be there 2 and 3 times a year for long periods of time. So Pakistan was a discovery, certainly, and that's always there in the books. It's never claimed. I'm always that kind of insider, outsider in some ways. And you have to remember that Pakistan's also an area of deep familiarity because it's where my mother's family would have come from in 1947 after the partition. So in some ways, the land of Pakistan is deeply familiar. But you're absolutely right.
And we're talking about the Punjab, which
the Punjab,
is split right down the middle by some British functionary with little sense of what it was doing to a culture that was shared by both Hindus and Muslims.
Right. And in some ways, Punjab paid the heaviest price for the partition.
Well, Bengal as well, don't you think?
Bengal had already the groundwork, in sense the ground had already been prepared for a partition of Bengal. And so some of that was, I suppose in Punjab there was also that memory of the violence, you know, which in Bengal to some extent had been averted. Those million people that died in that huge transfer of population.
It didn't happen as in the same way in the Punjab?
No, in Bengal, you mean? No, not so violently in Bengal.
Because it had been prepared.
And in some reason, thanks to Gandhi, who was wandering around like a kind of Lear figure from village to village, trying to stop the violence. And I think it was said that he did what 100,000 soldiers couldn't do in England, in Punjab.
Rehan Tabassum, your protagonist in this novel, is an aspiring writer. There we get a little autobiographical. But he's not able to write sincerely until he actually analyzes his childhood in India and steps away from assumptions about the country itself. Is that something you also experienced?
I think so. I think the contact with the West, with coming here at a certain time for college, and being able to have that distance, being able to see your place in a kind of cold, hard way, was very important because it broke that old instinctive world in which one grows up, and then you come back, and that return is very important.
And then there was the meeting with your father. You'd grown up, let's say Rehan is raised and privileged by his mother in Delhi, and it's only after he comes to this country that he gets some sense of what was really going on back in India, and his attitudes about things like the caste system and the role and how the privileged live differently than the poor in India.
It's amazing because you can grow up with all kinds of illusions in India. You can grow up in a kind of chrysalis that's so protective that one doesn't realize where one is, and it's that stepping back that brings a kind of clarity. For me in my personal life, the need to meet my father, which had seemed like quite a dull thing when I was a child, had become very sharp, very acute when I'd left.
Now, the novel ends on a question about violence in Pakistan. Where did it come from? Was it always there? Was your father killed while you were still working on this book?
I'd completed the book. I'd finished it. It was already on its way to the typesetters when he was killed. And so it was a very strange book in some ways to write because it's full of that kind of underlying violence. There's a placidity on the surface, but this violence underneath. And so it was awful to see it play out in that way in those first weeks after I'd written the book.
Rehan's father is a powerful Pakistani businessman. What kind of business?
Telecommunications.
Is it possible to do business in Pakistan without working with the military, which controls so much of the economy?
I think that it's my father certainly was one of the few examples of a self-made businessman, which is already fairly rare. But no, I think that in a society like that, your success, whether it be political or commercial, is full of a kind of dealing with political bosses, so to speak, you know, and you can't really get around that.
My guest is Atish Tasir. His latest book is a novel called Noon, and it's published by Faber and Faber. The first time we see Rehan seriously thinking about issues of class and races when his mother's home is robbed. What lessons does he come away with from that episode?
I think that there's, it starts out with him seeking isolation, and he wants in some ways to be in India, but to hold India at bay. And this experience was something very important to me because Indians living in India can often find themselves guilty of that, of wanting to be in India but be in a kind of gated environment. And I think what
is that still the case as India's economy is booming today?
Absolutely. I think perhaps more the case. Uh-huh. More the case.
Because even if you come out of a poorer situation,
right,
now you recognize how much you
want
to protect.
You want very much to be rid of that, and you want in some ways to hold off some of the squalor, some of the hardship of India, some of how oppressive sometimes the environment can be from which you came. And Rehan finds these things seep in through this. In this very closed world, he suddenly feels himself acted upon. And he ends up as very much diminished, even though he hardly leaves that environment. He hardly steps out of the farmhouse. He ends up a lesser man at the end of that experience. And I think that that is perhaps the most important part of this, that complicity in a kind of systemic violence from which you can't hold it off. You can't live in little islands.
He has the chance to protect his mother's staff, but he runs away from the situation.
He chooses a kind of flight, of a sort of moral escape, yeah.
But he realizes, does...
Cowardice is a good word. Cowardice is exactly right.
Does he believe that privilege and caste exempted him from issues of morality?
Well, to some extent, many of the things that are operating... issues, class judgments that have been made, caste judgments, he is exempt from those things. As an English-speaking man of privilege, he's in some way free of those judgments. And when the robbery happens, he, of course, there would never be a question of him being investigated because it's, you know, he's not the kind of person. But he finds himself with the rights of 10 adult men in his hands to do with them what he will. And in this case, that means having them thrashed. And so he's... He calls in one further degree of remove because he leaves. He doesn't want to be tainted. And so cowardice is exactly the right word.
Would similar situations arise in Pakistan where, is caste still something, even though it's a Muslim country, something that has to be dealt with in that country?
Caste runs through everything. In fact, one of the things that hasn't come out, which I find amazing, is that I think probably the situation around the lady who my father was trying to protect, that situation of a woman at a well being told that her religion is... That would have been full of caste undertones.
So it was presented as a religious thing. She was Christian,
right.
and they were Muslims. This is very convenient for us in this country to see it totally in those terms.
No. Caste comes up all the time. And sometimes people in Pakistan don't know that they're talking about caste. So they'll use a caste word. They'll say, oh, that person's a chura, which is a word for someone untouched. And they don't know that they're talking about caste.
Just as Rehan changes throughout the novel, its landscape changes as well. The book's timeline stretches from 1985 to 2011. How did Indian society change over that time? I mean, we obviously the whole approach to finance has changed. It went from calling itself a socialist country to one that really encourages capitalism in a big way. Is that totally transformed India?
But more than that, I think on human terms, what that means is the emergence of a credible middle class. And the protests that you saw this year of a kind of anti-corruption protest, the outrage of that kind of man, an urban middle class citizen of a city coming out, expressing outrage against the government, I think it's probably one of the most profound changes in India, because a man like that didn't exist 20 years ago. And the emergence of that kind of middle class, in my opinion, can be a force for good in a society like no other. So that on human terms has been one of the most real things.
Well, we see the leader of protest today being compared to Gandhi. So
that's
was that
foolish.
The last time?
I don't think that he's a Gandhi. He's in a sense has the quality of being a kind of holy fool, which is one of the things that India has a habit of throwing up. He has forerunners, but no, he's not a Gandhi, but. The kind of man who's inspired by him, the kind of man who's angry about the things that he's angry about, well, that's very good.
Well, we're not seeing mass protests in Pakistan. What we see instead is individual acts of protest. We see people committing suicide bombings and the such. The reader doesn't really get introduced to Pakistan in your novel until the year 2006, but things are pretty volatile by then.
Yeah. You can't have that kind of protest, Leonard, unless you have a credible urban middle class. Even with what we've seen in the Arab world, those protests have been defined by the fact that 60 to 70% of people live in cities, and that really does make for the change.
And you include news events, 9/11, the 2005 London bombings, they become part of your story here. To what degree did they reshape the societies in the novel?
I think when it comes to 9/11 for Pakistan, it's sort of been that one thing that stripped away that time before, and all of what was under the surface has kind of come to the surface. So 9/11, probably very profound.
But the novel ends before Osama bin Laden is killed.
Yeah, well, I didn't know Osama bin Laden was going to be killed when I wrote the novel.
Although the details of Rehan's story are different from your personal story, there are many similarities we've been pointing out. Your parents, your mother was an Indian journalist. Your father was a businessman and then a politician in Punjab. They never married?
They never married. It was they had a love affair, which I was the result, and they didn't marry. There was a kind of pretense of marrying for the sake of respectability, but they weren't married, and after a few years they parted. My father went back to fight General Zia in Pakistan, and my mother moved to India and brought me up there.
The book opens with a 20-year-old Rehan traveling to meet his father for the first time. Is that when you first met your father?
I met my father for the first time when I was 21, but not in the circumstance, not in the way that Rehan meets his in the novel. I mean, that's all quite different. But I did meet my father for the first time at 21.
Much of this book is about the untold story, what you at one point referred to as the negative space. We never meet Rehan's father in the novel, and yet he's a really important part of the book.
He's an outline, he's a sort of ghost of, and in fact that manipulation of absence is a very important part of this book. I wanted for there to be, because absence is so much the theme, that I wanted it to be actually in the form of the book, for its structure to contain some of its themes. And so that father who never appears is very much like the events that don't happen on stage, but they happen off stage and they have a resonance in the scenes that one does see.
Do you see the situation between India and Pakistan as being intractable? Would resolution of Kashmir, which looks like impossible,
Kashmir is not. I think that Kashmir sometimes becomes a kind of lightning rod for deeper tensions. No, I think that the problems with India and Pakistan, they're not intractable, but they're very profound. And for a big peace to come, I think we'd have to see in Pakistan the emergence of a real government in Pakistan, a government that in some ways has the mandate of the people, and that would be the beginning of a peace process. So Pakistan's problems at the moment are so many in Pakistan that it seems that it's hard to think of peace.
Well, there just have been so many assassinations every time somebody looks like something hopeful might happen, somebody kills them.
Right.
Your father is just one of many examples.
Yeah, and I think that till the power of the army is not curtailed, till the army doesn't come under the will of the people, then you're dealing with an organization that's kind of extra-national in some ways and to some extent parasitical, that's serving its own interests before it's serving the interests of its people. And so it becomes that's probably one of the most important changes that would have to happen in Pakistan.
We have very little time, but you gave an interview in the London Evening Standard that said you didn't write a word for 3 months following the killing of your father. And now that more time has passed, are you starting to write again?
I am trying to. I felt sometime in the summer, about 6 months later, for the first time, and I think that a kind of period of mourning has this quality almost of an illness. I felt well again, well in very important ways.
And where will you be going? Fiction, nonfiction?
Fiction, I hope. I think I'll be good for fiction by the end of the year, certainly.
We have this book, a novel called Noon, published by Faber and Faber, and my great thanks to Atish Tasir, AATISHTASEER, for stopping by today to talk about it.
Thank you, Lennon.